ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Canto 5, Chapter 18, Verse 12. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair tatra samasate sura Ravabhaktasya kuto mahatguna manorite nasati dhavato bahi. Jai Hare Krishna. Yasyasti bhakti bhagavata kinchana Vairagunaistatra samasate suraha Ravabhaktasya kuto mahadguna Manoritenasati davajobi Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana Sarvair gunaistatra samasate suraha Ravabhaktasya Mothers, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvajnanaistatra samasate sura bhavabhaktasya katamahaguna Manorite nasati davadubi Yasya, of whom asti, there is bhakti, devotional service, bhagavati, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, akinchana, without any motive. Sarvai, with all, gunai, good qualities, tatra, there in that person, samasate, reside, sura, all the demigods, bow unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, abhaktasya, of a person who is not devoted. Kuta, where? Mahatguna, good qualities. Manoratina, by mental speculation. Asati, in the temporary material world. Dhavata, who is running? Bahi, outside. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: all the demigods and their exalted qualities, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. On the other hand, a person devoid of devotional service and engaged in material activities has no good qualities. Even if he is adept at the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavor of maintaining his family and relatives, he must be driven by his own mental speculations and must engage in the service of the Lord's external energy. How can there be any good qualities in such a man? Purport, as explained in the next verse, Krishna is the original source of all living entities. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, verse 7, wherein Krishna says, Mamai vamsho jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatanaha, mana shashtaninjani pakriti stani karshati. Quote, the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. That's the end of the quote. All living entities are part and parcel of Krishna, and therefore they revive. When they revive their original Krishna consciousness, they possess all the good qualities of Krishna in a small quantity. When one engages himself in the nine processes of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, one's heart becomes purified and he immediately understands his relationship with Krishna. He then revives his original quality of Krishna consciousness. In the Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 8, there is a description of some of the qualities of a devotee. For example, Sri Pandit Haridas is described as being very well-behaved, tolerant, peaceful, magnanimous, and grave. In addition, he spoke very sweetly, his endeavors were very pleasing, he was always patient, he respected everyone. He always worked for everyone's benefit, his mind was free of duplicity, and he was completely devoid of all malicious activities. These are all originally qualities of Krishna, and when one becomes a devotee, they automatically become manifest. Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, says that all good qualities become manifest in the body of a Vaishnava, and that only by the presence of these good qualities can one distinguish a Vaishnava from a non-Vaishnava. Krishnadas Kaviraj lists the following 26 good qualities of a Vaishnava. Number one, he is very kind to everyone. Number two, he does not make anyone his enemy. Number three, he is truthful. Number four, he is equal to everyone. Number five, no one can find any fault in him.
Really?
Number six, he is magnanimous. Number seven, he is mild. Number eight, he is always clean. Nine, he is without possessions. 10, he works for everyone's benefit. 11, he is very peaceful. 12, he is always surrendered to Krishna. That's the important one. 13, he has no material desires. 14, he is very meek. 15, he is steady. 16, he controls his senses. 17, he does not eat more than required. 18, he is not influenced by the Lord's illusory energy. 19, he offers respect to everyone. 20, he does not desire any respect for himself. 21, he is very grave. 22, he is merciful. 23, he is friendly. 24, he is poetic. 25, he is expert. 26, he is silent. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, yesterday's verse was discussing the glories of devotees. And today's verse is discussing the result of association with devotees. And the result of association with devotees is that one develops bhakti. So that's the first line. Yasyasti bhakti. Bhakti. One develops bhakti by association with devotees. Krishna bhakti janma mula haya sadhu sangha. The root cause of the development of Krishna bhakti is sadhu sangha. And then what type of bhakti is then described? Bhagavati akinchana. So he develops akinchana bhakti. Or akinchana, Prabhupada translated here, is without motive. Anyway, develops pure bhakti for Krishna. Only by pure bhakti can you grab the attention of Krishna, or can you bring Krishna into your heart by pure devotion that is not motivated by material desire, that is not covered by monistic types, forms of knowledge or materialistic activities. Anyabhilashita shunyam gana karmadhyo navritam. And it is favorable to Krishna, anukulyena Krishna nushilana. It is constant endeavor to please Krishna favorably. So this is the definition of pure bhakti. So that type of bhakti With that type of bhakti, one can bring Krishna into one's heart. And by the bringing of Krishna into one's heart, then the effect of such an appearance is described in the second line. Sarvari gunais chatra samasite sura. All the good qualities of the devatas can be found in such a person. And Prabhupada's giving mention here, like religion, knowledge and renunciation, dharma, jnana, vairagya. These types of good qualities, virtuous qualities that can be found in the devatas, are found in such a devotee. The idea is that all the devatas come to reside in the body of a devotee, because the Lord is residing there on account of being pulled there by the bhakti of a devotee. The devatas are often described as the bodily limbs of the universal form of the Lord. So by bringing the body of the Lord within your heart, so also all the devatas are there. The other idea that is expressed here is by pleasing the Supreme Lord, then automatically all the devatas are satisfied with one. And the devatas are the presiding deities of everything in this material world, including our senses. There's a presiding deity of the mind. I think there's a presiding deity of even passing stool and all sorts of things, you know. So these are presiding deities, are the devatas actually. So by pleasing the Supreme Lord, they all come to reside in the body of a devotee. Or the idea is that they will come to serve a devotee, because they're the presiding deity, so they will manifest all the good qualities, almost as an offering to such an individual by his pure devotion to Krishna. As the Bhagavatam states, by watering the root of the tree, then the whole tree is watered, or by giving food to the stomach, so all the bodily limbs are energized. So also by service to the personality of Godhead, all the devatas become satisfied with such an individual. They come to reside in his body, and they manifest all the good qualities in such a person without any fault. So that's the important point, is that all the good qualities of God and the devatas come to reside in a devotee without any fault. So one may think, how is it that virtuous qualities can cause any fault? The idea of a virtuous quality is that it's devoid of fault. But in the material world, virtuous qualities are accompanied by many faults when independent of the personality of Godhead. So that's described in the second verse, Harava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahaguna, that if one is a bhakta, if he's not devoted to the personality of Godhead, then all this, where are the good qualities? Mahaguna, where are the good qualities if he is not a devotee? I remember this statement particularly pinched me when I first, the first year I was a devotee. Because devotees, they used to love to quote this one. They have no good qualities. I used to find that very irritating, because I was like, I don't see that you have any good qualities, you know, in our vision of immaturity. And also, devotees will maybe be a little fanatic. They would say like that. They would point to all the people in the street. They have no good qualities. And I would sit there and argue with the devotees. How can you say that? You know, there's so many people with so many good qualities. How is it that they don't have any good qualities? And the devotees, speaking very simply, will say, because they're not devotees. Abhakta, because simply on that point, they're not devotees, they have no good qualities. But they didn't describe, they needed to go into a little bit more detail. Because it didn't seem that just because being a devotee, all the good qualities are really manifesting automatically as we are hearing here. So what is meant by that? Also, so I was somewhat argumentative hearing devotees say this. And then later on I watched this Memories of Indradumna Swami, where he describes himself being with Prabhupada in the airport. And he was walking in the airport and Prabhupada was saying, all these people here, they have no good qualities. And Prabhupada was walking a little further. And do you understand Indradumna? He was Indradumna Brahmachari at the time. Do you understand Indradumna? And Indradumna was like, yes, Prabhupada. You know, usually you just have to say yes. You don't know what you're saying yes to. So they walked a little bit further. And Prabhupada again said, all these people here, they have no good qualities. Do you understand Indradumna? Yes, Prabhupada, you know, he describes. And then they were getting closer to, I guess, the gate or whatever. I don't remember the exact details. So then Prabhupada says, All these people here, they have no good qualities. But when we make them Krishna conscious, they will develop all the good qualities and go back home, back to Godhead. Do you understand, Indradumna? And then he describes the third time as a charm, I guess. Yes, Prabhupada, I understand. The idea is here that where are the good qualities in those who are not devotees? And a detail, a further elaboration of that point is given in the last line. Because the action of their qualities is directed towards asati. Manoratena means the mental speculations, which are all connected to asat, the temporary material world. And davatobihi means they're running after the external. So they have no good qualities because the actions of their qualities are not connected to God. They're connected to the material world. So this is the major fault in the quality in qualities or virtue that is not in relationship to the personality of Godhead. This is described by Prahlad Maharaj when he says the statement, "Vipra dvisha guna yata ravinda naba pada ravinda vimukat shapacham varishtam manye tararpito mano vachane tarta pranam punati sakunam natu purimana." He prays like this in Lord Nrisimhadeva, and he says that even if someone is vipra dvisha guna yata, means someone is endowed, a vipra means a brahmana, he's endowed with all these wonderful qualities. Dvisha means 12 primary qualities that are mentioned. Padharavinda Vimukha, he is averse or turned away from the personality of Godhead, then he is not as good as a dog eater, Shapacham. He's not as good as a dog eater who is who is tadarpito, who has surrendered his mind, his words, his every endeavor, and his very life to the personality of Godhead. And then he describes the reason why. Punati sa kulam. Not to Bhurimana. He says, because such a brahmana cannot even purify his family, whereas the dog eater can purify his whole family. And the idea here is that he has these good qualities, but they manifest a fault along with the good quality. And the fault is that he becomes proud that I have so many good qualities. And he's not devoted to the personality of Godhead. So the actions of those qualities are directed towards matter, not towards Krishna. And he becomes proud of those qualities. Look how wonderful a person I am. So, because of that pride, he's not able to purify even himself, what to speak of his family. Whereas the devotee who's dedicated every action, thought, mind, and so on to the personality of Godhead, he can purify his whole family. So, this verse expresses the point that I think is similarly being made here. That where is the good quality of those persons who are not devotees when their every endeavor is just serving their mental speculations and not serving the personality of Godhead? Then where is the good quality to be found in them? Similarly, such good qualities create bondage to the material world. Interesting enough, normally we think of virtue as creating a good situation and so on. But the actual virtue minus Krishna consciousness creates bondage to the material energy. That's exactly what Krishna speaks about in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita when he says the mode of goodness binds a person to the material world. It's like a golden chain. A golden chain is still a chain, nonetheless, but it's a golden chain. So mode of goodness is better than mode of passion and ignorance, and yet it binds one to the material energy. And the idea is that because one becomes attached to those good qualities, rather than being attached to God, he's attached to his good qualities. And so they serve to act as a rope binding him to the material energy. So where are the good qualities of such a person? Also, because the mind and the material energy, this is why Prabhupada, one reason why I think Prabhupada quotes this verse from Bhagavad Gita chapter 15, 7, Mavai Vamsho Jiva Loke. So the jiva, the soul, is a particle of Krishna, or part and parcel of Krishna, eternally. But he is struggling in this material world, grappling hard for happiness, prakriti sannikarshati, struggling with the mind and the senses. So the idea is that the mind is actually a very is a very uncontrollable entity. It has godlike power. Srimad Bhagavatam says that the power of the mind is godlike. I'm sure we have that experience in controlling the movements of the mind. It's very powerful. And ultimately, the mind cannot be controlled. Because it's one of Krishna's energies. So only Krishna can ultimately subdue the mind. Therefore, bhakti, direct your energy towards God, because he's the only one who can really subdue the mind. So if one is without devotion to Krishna, then it's not that the mind stays always in a virtuous position. It changes very rapidly. Even in good persons, they can be found to do very crazy things or think very crazy things. Persons, sometimes they think of themselves as a good guy. Everyone thinks of themselves as a good guy. But some people are actually really, truly like virtuous persons. And yet, in their heart, they'll be thinking of their superiority to other living entities, or they're considering their faults. Why can't they also be like this? You know, virtuous person will think like this. Virtue is obviously a good thing. Why can't others be like this? And that way, they'll be prone to many devotional defects, things which are considered actually averse to the culture of devotional service on account of their virtue. On account of their virtues. So these good qualities minus Krishna consciousness actually creates a dilemma for the soul. It creates a situation where he remains bound to the material energy. So therefore it's that Prabhupada is giving a list of 26 qualities here, and out of this, from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and out of this list of 26 qualities, one of them is considered the primary quality of a devotee, and the rest of them are considered secondary qualities. The primary quality of a devotee of Krishna is that he surrendered to God. That's the primary quality that has to be there. And the secondary qualities just help to magnify this one quality. Or they help to express surrender to Krishna in variegated ways. But the main quality is that one is surrendered to Godhead. And that surrender is expressing itself through these secondary characteristics. Whereas if one is minus surrender to the Godhead, then these qualities are decorations of a dead body. That's what the Shastra says. Bhagava bhakti hinasya jati shastram japas tapas apranasyeva dehasya mandalam lokaranjanam. If someone who's devoid of Bhagava bhakti, pure devotion to God, then all these good qualities, some are cited. Jati means aristocratic birth, education in the Vedas and so on. These good qualities actually serve as decorations of a dead body. It means they help conceal a very horrible truth. When you say, generally in any culture, a dead body is usually given more attention than a living body. And probably all cultures in the modern world, they spend a lot of money on the dead bodies, especially in America. The coffins would be so much expensive. They'll decorate the body very elaborately. They put shots in the body so that it doesn't look so discolored at the funeral. It looks a little bit nice. And they really, you know, show a lot more attention than they would have probably ever shown the person had he been alive. That's the general culture today. And yet, the decoration of the body is just to kind of obfuscate to some degree the unpalatable situation of the death of the person. It's just a covering of the actual reality. Of course, in the example, it's not a very good covering, because it's obviously he's dead. But the idea is that similarly, one who's lacking Bhagavad Bhakti, that's a very ugly reality, one who is devoid of devotion to God. And so all these qualities become like a decoration of a dead body. It is obfuscating the actual dark reality of not having devotion to God, and therefore not at all really appreciable from the absolute position. So one, it says here, by devotion to God, by uncovering one's Krishna consciousness, then these qualities begin to manifest automatically. And that's because the soul is part and parcel of God, of Krishna. So these qualities do exist in him. In a minute way, they exist in God in a complete way and exist in the soul in a minute way. So as he covers the essential quality of his soul, then all these good qualities actually automatically begin to manifest. And therefore, to uncover that, one practices devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master. Prabhupada mentions here about the 9 processes of devotional service for uncovering that quality in the soul. And when he uncovers that quality, these good qualities automatically serve him as various expressions of his devotion to God. But when one tries to focus in on the cultivation of any one of these qualities without development in bhakti, then it does serve to create an obstacle in his mentality. I've seen this actually. It's actually a reality. If everyone keys in on, you know, manifesting all various good qualities, I don't mean to say that it's unimportant to be a good example. We don't want to do anything that shall bring disrepute to our spiritual master or our lineage. So from that state of consciousness, we try to act properly so that no ill fame shall come to our lineage or our gurus and so on. This is a tangential point I'm about to make, but it's mentioned in Haribhakti Vilas how one should hide one's guru. As he mentions, one should hide four things. He should hide his beads. He should hide his Gayatri mantras that he receives from the guru. He should hide his Ishta Devata, his worshipable deity. And one should hide the guru, is also mentioned. And I often joke with devotees, the reason is that we should hide our guru, because when we look at if they shall look at us and connect us to our gurus, we'll bring great ill repute to our guru. Therefore, hide your guru, don't tell, you know. Usually that's the first question, and it's kind of the first question to ask you. Well, maybe the first thing they ask you, maybe it's your name. And then after they ask you, who's your guru, or who you're aspiring for. But it's mentioned in the Shastra that one should actually hide one's guru. I joke this is the reason why, because we don't want to bring embarrassment to him by our own lack of, you know, Christian consciousness. But the idea is that we don't want that trouble coming to our spiritual master, so we try to act in a way that will be pleasing and will not bring ill fame to the spiritual master, to Krishna. And that way, with such a consciousness, good qualities begin to start manifesting themselves. But if someone like tries to key in on becoming very humble, or key in and becoming very compassionate, minus that connection in their consciousness to the Lord, then such a quality will serve only to create devotional defects in the form of pride and fault finding. Oh, others are not like this. Others are not manifesting such good qualities. These types of defects start to appear in the mind because of keying in on just manifesting good qualities without seeing the essential quality. It is also a fact that a person who has dedicated his energies to God and Krishna may not immediately manifest all the good qualities. That is mentioned by the verse, like Apichet Sudarat Charo Vachate Mama Nanya Bak, that someone does some very abominable activity. Sudarat Charo means very abominable. But he is a nanyabak, he's surrendered to the Supreme Lord, then he should be considered a sadhu. And of course, the reason for that is not to glorify being a nonsense and practicing bhakti. You know, it's okay, don't worry, I'm still a sadhu even though I'm doing bad activities. But it's rather to glorify the nature of pure devotion. That even if someone is doing or has done some bad activity, by pure devotion to Krishna, Ananyabhak, he should be considered sadhu. And there's a reason for that. Shipram bhavati dharmatma, he quickly becomes righteous, that's mentioned. Quickly doesn't mean the next day necessarily, but quickly in his lifetime. He gets his act together, he becomes a devotee of God, which is the main point. The good and bad qualities in the material world are really not that essential. They're not substantial. Really, Krishna appreciates that you've captured the point. The point of existence is dedication to himself. So if you captured that point, even if you're lacking in some of the good qualities, you've understood the real point of the existence, which is not to be virtuous. The real point of existence is not to be a very law-abiding or moral person. That's not the point of material existence. The point of material existence is to actually help us to see that we are to dedicate our existence to the Supreme Lord. That's the actual purpose. So even if someone is lacking good qualities, if he catches this point, Krishna says he should be considered a sadhu. And Shipram Bhavati Dharma, he will very quickly become righteous. He will manifest all wonderful qualities, but whose actions are in relationship to the personality of Godhead. So it becomes glorious. Otherwise, it just becomes a fall. It's like someone like Bill Gates, for example. He's a very charitable person. He gives a lot of charity as long as it has nothing to do with God. That quality is ultimately a fault. It's a major fault because A, it's asati. Whatever he's doing is temporary. it has no substantial a permanent effect finally until it kind of expresses an aversion towards God, which the result of aversion towards God is samsara. So what's the use of such a quality? So this is the idea here. One should become devotee. Now it's, this is mentioning the actions of akinchana bhakti. So bhakti that is without a motive or material motivation. That type of bhakti begins to, and the nectar of devotion is described as, what is that? The six characteristics of pure devotion are there. The first one is that it removes kleshagni, and then the second one? Shubhada, that it bestows all auspicious qualities. And then this verse is actually quoted to illustrate that point. So it is understood as devotees overcome their anarthas, these types of devotional qualities begin to manifest themselves, and one is glorious. Otherwise, one is otherwise such good qualities are not very significant, minus its connection with Krishna. It's not very important at all. Nothing to really be praised or criticized. It's just insignificant as such. So, are there any questions? This is understanding the verse. Okay. So. Yeah, you were to ask something. Yeah, oh, well, from what the purport read, the because the soul is part and part. The question was how does one develop the qualities? Is it something you actively do, or does Krishna like kind of like, fuse you with the qualities? The idea that Prabhupada expressed in the purport is because a soul is part and parcel of the Lord, then he's intrinsically having good qualities in a minute way, just as the sun ray is part and parcel of the sun, so it has the quality of the sun in a minute way. So also the soul has the qualities of God in a minute way. These are actually God's qualities. They're existing in the soul in a minute way because he's minute. And when he uncovers his God consciousness, then the qualities automatically manifest, meaning that they're there, but they're covered by Maya, as it were, material delusion. So as he's becoming more and more free from the modes of nature, then these good qualities of God, they're actually qualities of God, become more and more manifest from his personality. So it's something we work on by working on Krishna consciousness. By Prabhupada says by doing Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, he lists a whole list of devotional activities. By execution of those activities under the guidance of Guru, then once Krishna conscious nature becomes more and more manifest. And along with that Krishna consciousness, so also all the good qualities of Krishna. So our idea is that really we focus on our developing Krishna consciousness. And I don't think this is not to say that we become divorced from the evolvement of good qualities progressively. Like I said, when we think of, I don't want to do anything that shall bring any ill fame to my guru, that shall bring any ill fame to Krishna, then automatically, from that mentality alone, which is a devotional mentality, you do start to automatically manifest certain virtues that will not bring any ill repute to Krishna. Otherwise, these qualities are motive, they can be motive goodness type qualities. So by cultivating the motive goodness, these types of qualities will become manifest also. Not all of them, or let's say these qualities have their transcendental application and their mundane application. So in relationship to the mode of goodness, a mundane application is there. But then such qualities ultimately serve as a defect, a devotional defect at least, and the very least a devotional defect. And furthermore, because the modes of nature are always fighting for competition, those types of virtuous qualities are not sustainable. At best, they're sustainable in this life. When you die, you get a mode of passion body or something like that. So in that way, it is the qualities in a transcendental sense become manifest as we manifest Krishna consciousness. So it's not exactly like a fusing from Krishna. It's more like they're there, but they need to be unraveled. The modes of nature need to be unraveled by our progressive Krishna consciousness. That's how I'm understanding. Oh, is it? Okay. Okay. Fantastic.
Hey Krishna, thank you for your class. So first we need to accept God in our hearts, and then these qualities will like show up and develop.
Yeah, we can think of, yeah, because I did describe it like that in the beginning. By inviting Krishna into our heart, then all the devatas are also there, and all these qualities begin to manifest. Inviting Krishna into our heart is not like a one-day event. You know, one day I opened up my heart and said, all right, Krishna, now you can come in. I cleaned up everything good. Inviting Krishna to our heart is called sadhana bhakti. You know, so sadhana means spiritual practice, moving step by step towards Krishna. So that's when I say inviting Krishna to our heart, I mean by doing devotional service, we're progressively inviting Krishna into our heart, you know, pulling him more and more towards us, and we're being pulled more in towards him. So then as we come closer to Krishna, then we become more and more, our spiritual qualities become more and more manifest. As I said, if you come closer to fire, you become more and more hot. So as we become closer to Krishna, so we become more and more spiritually empowered. And
so you might have these qualities like in this process, but the whole manifestation of them is going to be when you're going to
have
Krishna.
That's right. That's right. They become more and more manifest as you become closer to Krishna. That's right. And there's Siddhartha Prabhu. Oh, okay. Get it together.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. On the subject matter of good qualities, I'm trying to understand something a little bit more deeply. The nature of offenses. It seems like there's two types of offenses. One that could be born of like just due to our bad qualities. We're like, you know, we're envious by nature, or we like to find fault with others. But then there's also offenses that are born out of a lack of like devotional sentiment. Like, for example, not having regard for the holy names, you know, not seeing the value of the holy name over the names of the demigods. Is that correct? Is that the proper way of looking at it, or maybe I'm missing something?
Well, the second point to me seems just due to some level of ignorance, which I guess you can say is a bad quality, to be ignorant. Ignorant of the spiritual truths of Christian consciousness. Like you gave the examples of not valuing the holy name, which is an offense, or considering the holy name to be equal to the devatas, which is an offense. That's just due to a lack of spiritual understanding or realization, which is a fault. It's an anartha. It's a type of anartha. It's called tattva brahma or tattva vibrahma. It's a fault, or also a bad quality, so to speak. Anarthas means bad quality, essentially. So I think the two are connected, that offenses are due to bad qualities that are in our characteristics, including the bad quality, as it were, of being ignorant of spiritual truths. That's a bad quality. And some devotees even find that to be a-okay. It's not even important to be so much edified in the spiritual truths of Krishna consciousness. Just as long as you're doing service, but you don't realize that the service has to be edified. You know, service begins with faith, and when faith becomes well-informed, it becomes the key to our further progress in devotional service. So although one may be faithful, his faith should be well-informed by spiritual knowledge, sambandhagyan, and to dismiss the importance of that is a fault or a bad quality. And then, yeah, such bad qualities will lead to various types of offenses. You know, for example, not understanding the different Vaishnava tattva, for example. Vaishnava tattva, what is a Kanishtha Adhikari? What is a Madhyama Adhikari? This can lead to various offenses in our activity. So ignorance is a type of bad quality which definitely leads to offenses. But the offenses can be brihat or it can be anu. You know, so brihat, big offenses means when done with intention to cause harm or hurt. This is a type of what's called a major offense. And a small offense means when it's done because of ignorance. It's done inadvertently due to the influence of ignorance. And it certainly slows down a person's progress, but it doesn't extinguish it. Whereas offenses that are done intentionally to cause harm or hurt and so on actually extinguishes a person's, it can, it has potential to actually completely extinguish a person's devotional sentiments. In other words, until our Christian consciousness becomes well informed, we do inadvertently commit offenses. But those types of offenses don't kick us out because it is inadvertent and it is due to ignorance. Now, if we're satisfied in our ignorant position, then our movement will be very slow. Because as long as our faith is not well informed, then movement is slow in devotional service. And that's why movement generally is seen to be slow for many persons within and institutions and so on. But as our faith becomes more informed, not just knowledge, but realization, when we're starting to really realize that, then things get better. The qualities become, the faults become extinguished. Does that answer the question? I think I tried that. Okay.
This isn't so much a question as more of like a thought that's going through my head. Maybe you can help clarify it, but it seems like, because, you know, due to our like you were saying, due to our mentality of being okay with our lackadaisical affair, like me, I'm speaking about myself here, then we because we're okay with the fact that, okay, I'm, you know, being lackadaisical, then there'll be a tendency to commit offenses.
Okay.
Because of that mood within. So it's just interesting because we hear that we don't attain devotion by something we're doing, but we attain it by the desire to attain it. The activities we're doing are not
so both. Because anushilanam has two features to it, action and sentiment. The word anushilanam, shilanam means behavior. And behavior has two features to it, taken from the verbal root shila, which means one action is called as a cheshtarupa, which means something that one endeavors for. And another is called bhavarupa, which means the sentiment behind the endeavor. So it's not just the desire or sentiment, I'm using it in a broad way here, but it's also the action, so it's both. It's both. We actually do have to do things like chant Hare Krishna and hear the classes, and these are actions, you know, it's not just desire alone, but actions with desire for something better. But yeah, if we're satisfied in an ignorant position, then movement will be slow because we will inadvertently do things out of ignorance. And, you know, it goes on. That's how progress is made, actually. For those who are progressive, they try to get themselves more and more edified and that way improve progressively. But what else can we do? Our starting position is ignorance. Om Agyana Tamirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya. And I always joke that the ignorance is so profound that even after you hear the truth, the ignorance remains. It doesn't go away so easy. It's like a nagging child or something. Siddhartha, Prabhu, you want to say something?
Thanks for a wonderful class, Prabhu, and filling the class with a lot of scriptural quotes. So, I want to, some practical, a couple of practical ways where, in addition to being very philanthropic, a couple of other ways where, especially people coming even from pious and very so-called religious background in India, even in the West, a couple of very important ways where they think they are doing very good, especially the non-devotees. One is contributing to the betterment of the society. I know the answers to these questions, but I want to hear if you have more scriptural quotes to deepen my faith that those are not actually the good qualities.
What about this one?
Huh?
So what about this
more,
one?
More, I want to say. If you just say this, that's okay. But so one is that the society has given you so much, an argument is the society has given you so much in terms of all, at least half of us are educated in, I mean, you are not, but we are also but we are half and half perhaps, but we are funded by public money, our mm-hmm. so-called material education, but we are not giving them anything back. So it's like they gave you their money and you're not paying them back. It's almost like a loan, but not a loan on paper.
When you give that example, the first verse that comes to my mind is Devarshi Bhutapta Enam Pritriyanam. You know this verse?
Yeah.
That's the first verse that comes to my mind, that who's indebted to the Devas and the Rishis and the Bhutas and the forefathers and the kings and the public, if one is surrendered to the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda. You know, that's one verse that immediately comes to mind. And then the verse after that says, even if there is some sinful reaction for doing so, the Lord will purify the devotee within his heart. So there is no loss. Another verse that comes to mind, 1:5:17, where Narada Muni says, even if someone abandons all his duties for bhakti, and due to his bhakti being abhajatam, being not fixed in bhajan, he gets attached or commits an offense and then falls down, what is the loss for him? Whereas if someone remains totally dedicated to duty and all the things that come along with that, philanthropy towards the society and so on, what does he gain? Simply he dies at the end. Nothing to be gained. There are many, of course, there are tons of verses, but these are verses that immediately come to my mind just by that statement.
Yeah, I'll finish my question.
Yeah.
Finish my other thing. The other thing is...
You can speak into the mic, uh-huh. Yeah.
Another common, like you mentioned in your other class, that also contribute to the progress of society by having a family, and having a family is considered a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not having a family is considered a bad thing from time immemorial, right from Daksha. I mean, that's a time immemorial thing. I mean, they consider that to be the religious thing.
Yeah.
So while doing both these things, we are really disappointing and earning the wrath of so many people, like parents and people who, when we walk in the street, people, they don't say it perhaps if they are somewhat pious or they have, but most people at least think that, especially if they come from, see as I'm so much of my salary, like Rompal Maharaj also gave some example, so much of my salary went into this person, is going into this person, I mean, this person is doing nothing. So, I guess my question is, where are we? I mean, it's sometimes you even say that you're not a devotee, you're just trying to be a devotee. So when I'm not even a devotee, I'm just trying to be a devotee, I mean, how appropriate is it for me to just abandon the duties and saying, hey, Bhagavatam 5.18.12, I have all good qualities, you don't have any good qualities, and I don't really need to do this. Devarshi have some verses to back me up.
Well, the operative principle probably is guidance of a guru. We'll just keep that, that's always there. As an operative principle, how I should conduct myself according to my level of faith. But in principle, as far as the presentation of the Bhagavatam is concerned, soon as a person gets faith in bhakti, then he's got qualification just to focus on that, soon as he has particular faith. Now, according to the particular type of, because people need individual guidance according to their where they're at. So someone may guide a particular person who might be particularly attached to those types of mundane ideas. So they might give him or her such guidance to carry on with those activities, but offer all the fruits unto Krishna. This is called Arupa Siddha Bhakti. We discussed this in Bhagavad Gita class last week. It's called Arupa Siddha Bhakti. It's not, those duties are not intrinsically devotional, but if you offer the fruits of those activities to Krishna, they take on the quality of bhakti. Now, a particular guru may advise his disciple like that, seeing him very attached in that particular way. Another guru may tell them that it's not at all important, just focus on this particular point, that will be good for you. And then, you know, if he's committed and surrendered to his guru, he will follow that. But in principle, as soon as a person gets bhakti, he's qualified just for that alone. But in order, again, like I said, in order to make his devotion well informed, there's the principle of Guru Padashraya in the very outset of devotion. And then the Guru may, seeing the individual, give a particular type of guidance to him. Otherwise, none of these things are actually essential or important. A person could really just chant Hare Krishna, render services in the temple, bas. And even if, as Narada Muni says, even if it's a bhajatam, even if it's imperfectly done, you said, I mentioned many times, we're not even devotees, we're just trying to be devotees, good enough. It's a good start because you have faith in the objective of pure devotion, the objective of Krishna consciousness. So even if you were to just fully focus in on that alone, in principle, according to the Shastras, that's A-OK. That's Swarup Siddha Bhakti. And I already told so many funny stories about the powerful effects of Swarup Siddha Bhakti. I mentioned, you know, the one story where the mouse was on the altar eating ghee wicks every day. And one of the ghee wicks he ate caused his body to catch on fire. And so the Supreme Lord took that as an artsy offering, you know. And so in his next life, the mouse took birth as a queen who was attached to offering the arti to the Lord. And then the life after that, she attained the spiritual world. Another one was a bird got caught in a hunter's nest, and a dog took the bird off the nest and circumambulated the temple. So that bird, who was just on the verge of death, got the benefit of circumambulation of the Lord. And in his next life, he received something like spiritual world or some type of liberation or something. So the effects of exclusive devotion to God are profound. And they're not hyperbole, although they really are far out. Some of those stories are, of course, far out. So in principle, if one were just to dedicate all the energy this way, even inviting the wrath of so many persons because of their lack of devotion to God, then that is the principle that the gopis followed, you know, and that's the line of devotion we're told to pursue. But like I said, the operative principle really is the guidance of the guru. And when a person's faith is weak, if he might take such an approach and might not be able to survive it, like for Indians, for example, oftentimes their attachment to their family is so deep that they might not be able to survive the wrath of their family members in the beginning stages of their devotion. Their faith is too weak. And there are many stories like that, actually, where a devotee goes back home and he gets bewildered by his family. And then he calls the devotees here and says, you know, you never told me that about, you never spoke to me about devotion to my mom. And, you know, and getting his faith got really bewildered. So therefore, the guru, the guidance of the guru is really the operative principle. And he can say, okay, this person's faith is such that he needs to first start off like this and move this way. With a Westerner, he may say, just surrender to Krishna. Don't worry about anything. And if the wrath of the family comes, it doesn't matter because I don't even care about family. And my point is that different guidance for different types of individuals. Although in principle, if a person just dedicates everything to bhakti, there is no loss whatsoever. What if the parents are trying to be devotees, they're trying to chant Hare Krishna, then why should they find fault with my decision? Well, what's wrong with that? If they're... Yeah, so I do find this a lot. I remember when I moved to Chaupati, and not moved there, but I stayed there for 2 months, and this was in 2007, and I went back with a god brother who was moving to Chaupati permanently, and his parents were 16 rounds and everything, and he still had to lie to them that he was joining the ashram, you know, had to lie to his family that he was joining the ashram. He said, I'm going there for some training. And I'll be there for a few months just for some training. And then after that, you know, we'll see. And then, so we were talking, myself, this devotee, and another devotee, we were talking. And one devotee who was been in Chaupati for over 10 years at that time, he said, oh yes, I've been telling my family for the last 10 years I'm going for training. I'm going for training. And so then the other devotee said, well, don't they know it's like 10 years? He said, they know, but they can't accept. So I just keep telling them for training, for further training. Yeah, and even though these are devotee parents, you know.
Amanand Prabhu, He's a big devotee there. Yeah, you know him.
Yeah, of course.
He keeps telling his mother that as soon as I translate Chaitan Charitamrita, some book to Marathi, I will come back and marry you and stuff.
Yeah, so...
And he knows that's not going to happen in his lifetime.
Yeah, he knows. So, like this, the attachment is strong. And we want to honor that. At the same time, we have to honor Krishna. We can't forget that Krishna is our eternal father. And we've been neglecting him for a time without beginning, like a very long time. So we ultimately, our hearts, of course, plunge due to the material identification. These are my parents. So that makes it, you know, the turmoil in the heart felt very acutely. And therefore, the position of the gopis was glorified so much. Because we do feel that. But at the same time, while trying to respect and honor our parents, we have to also honor Krishna. Getting a situation where we're able to do that without feeling eaten up inside. So we need guidance of a superior who can help us deal with such a situation when it comes. Seeing our situation, he may say, okay, you have to do it like this first until your heart becomes stronger. And then transition this way. I know many devotees in Chaupati, one that I'm very close to, he joined the ashram. His mother was single parent. Not single parent, I think his father died young or something. And his mom was raising him by himself, and he joined the ashram. He worked for like a period of a year or two, gave everything to his mother, and then joined the ashram. It was very devastating for her, obviously. And yet, honoring Krishna, he made such a decision. I don't imagine such things are very easy. Therefore, that's why I said in the beginning, the operative principle is guidance of a guru. Because if someone shall do that prematurely, based on the pure devotional principle, but he lacks that faith, then he might fall down from such an action. Therefore, guidance is required. Okay, anything else? Did you want to say something? No? Okay. Good. All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.